The show is looking for America. For the next 52 weeks, we'll be bringing you along on this unprecedented search. The stories, the people, the spirit, the losses, the lessons. We'll take you where ABC and MSNBC won't on their search for America. And at the end, you'll...
Sorry. We found it.
You'll feel
no,
like...
No, it's wedged right in there between Canada and Mexico.
Ah. Then let's just get on with a regular edition of Le Show.
Thank you.
inevitable, so why not? Hi, from the edge of... Hi, where did that come from? From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition, a very, very special edition of the show. And if it is special for you, you already know why. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, it's useful to set the bar low when you're in broadcasting. So I want you to take notice right here at the beginning, or close to the beginning of the broadcast, that I'm gonna set this as the floor today on this broadcast. I may say some stupid things in the next remnant of an hour. I will not say anything as stupid as this. Mike Barnicle, defrocked Boston Globe columnist, now a part-time MSNBC anchor, sitting in for Chris Matthews this week, introducing his guest for that segment of an hour, G. Gordon Liddy, this way. G. Gordon Liddy is a nationally syndicated radio talk show host and all-around good guy. For the kids in the audience, he was he's a convicted felon. He served, 4 years for his part in the Watergate break-in and conspiracy? So that makes you an all-around good guy. Wow. Imagine what Charlie Starkweather must be by now. And another quote that... This has nothing to do with setting the bar low. This is just on the same wavelength as Jamie Kellner of Time Warner, AOL Time Warner, the soon-to-be former AOL Time Warner. Hey, that almost rhymes. The soon-to-be former AOL Time Warner, Jamie Kellner, saying that every time you fast-forward through the commercials, you're stealing programming. Here's FCC Commissioner Michael Copps this week. Quote, each time a consumer goes out and purchases an analog TV set, we move farther and farther away from the congressional objective of free over-the-air digital TV. You bad person. Hey, I just bought one. Take me to digital jail. Man. Yeah, all right. This you may not have seen. I believe you may not have seen this. This is about a week old, but it's worth bringing back now because it's about mixed messages. U.S. jet fighter pilots responsible for at least 10 deadly friendly fire accidents in the Afghanistan war have regularly been given amphetamines to fly longer hours. This is your Air Force on drugs. Then when they return to base, the pilots are given sedatives by Air Force doctors to help them sleep before beginning the whole cycle again on the next mission, often less than 12 hours later. What do they think they are, medical residents? The exact drugs pilots are given and how they're taken is outlined in a 24-page document obtained by the Toronto Star. Oh, great. The Canadians are busting us. This is embarrassing. Produced by the Top Gun Fighter Training School and the Naval Aerospace Medical Research Lab in Pensacola, Florida. A spokesperson for the U.S. Air Force Surgeon General's Office in Washington confirmed that pilots are given dexedrine, generically known as dextroamphetamine, or dexies, to stay alert during combat missions in the Big AF. Pilots refer to dexedrine as go pills. The sleeping pills they're given, called Ambien, yeah, and Restoril are referred to as no-go pills. All right, then. Don't stand under when they fly by. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Public Relations Watch, this is from a press release issued last week. PR giant Golan Harris is bragging about its new Global Obesity Task Force. You know that there's all this news about the pandemic of childhood obesity in America, among other things. And you know that fat guy is suing fast food firms. Okay, here comes the Global Obesity Task Force. Its mission is to protect the interests and image of the multi-billion dollar food industry. The press release states, quote, with consumers becoming increasingly wary of American big business, many companies find themselves under scrutiny. The increase in childhood obesity has special interest and government groups seeking to hold someone responsible. And corporate America is the likely target. Golan Harris International has created the Global Obesity Task Force with proprietary tools to help companies under fire in the obesity debate. Wide ranges of industries are vulnerable and need to act to protect their brands, businesses, and reputations. Quick service restaurant companies, snack makers, beverage producers, the television and video game industries. When managed appropriately, companies can withstand issues without public confidence and brand trust eroding, says Kathy Weber. Clients include McDonald's and Tyson's Foods. And here is a company that may be calling them for their public relations services, maybe before the hour is up. Quote, at least 68,000 pounds of E. coli-tainted beef, linked to that huge beef recall by Conagra Beef Company, may turn up on dinner tables as ready-to-eat canned chili, meat spaghetti sauce, beef ravioli, or some other meal. Or it might end up as pet food or fertilizer, and no one has to tell you it's there. A spokesperson for the Greeley, Colorado-based beef company, Conagra, said Thursday that meat returned as a result of that recall, the second largest in the nation's history, by the way, will be cooked and turned into food for people or pets or non-food products or both. It's totally legal, and according to the United States Department of Agriculture, it's wholesome, too.
Old cake, still beer. I just can't learn how to win. My dog don't love me. Got no friends. My girl, she's gone. I can't get in the zone. My beer, a crowd. We both took a good look back, and either one liked what we saw. I'm all alone, I can't get in the zone. La do do dee do dee do dee dee ba do dee ba dron dee 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 do dee dee ba do dee dee ba ba dee do dee da dee do da dee da ba do do ba do da sing dee ba 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 do do dee ba ba do do dee do be dee 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 ba do da do do dee 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 ba do do dee 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 ba do dee dee ba ba dee do dee da. Zone. Check this out, fellas. My doorbell rang. I missed you this
what she confessed. Well, there she stood, Miss Loveliness. My babe is home, and now I'm in the zone. No more alone, I'm right here in the zone. My babe is home, and now I'm in the zone. Now I'm in the zone.
This is the show. And now, here's a copyrighted feature for you.
We're so sorry.
The apology of the week. The apologies of the week. So let's start with Clint Eastwood. Why don't we? Why don't we? I'm sorry about shooting the Daily News. Clint Eastwood being interviewed by the news, the Valley. Used to be the Valley News, isn't it? Well, who am I asking? The Daily News in the San Fernando Valley, soon to not secede from Los Angeles. In his new film, Bloodwork, which primarily takes place in the Valley. Oh, boy. Huh. Clint Eastwood's FBI profiler angrily discharges his weapon into a stack of issues of the Daily News so he can give the bullet to forensics. When being interviewed by a reporter for the paper, he apologized for shooting it. Clint Eastwood apologized for shooting the Daily News. El Al Israel Airlines has apologized to the family of Leah Rabin, the late wife of slain former Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, after sending a letter amending her frequent flyer status 9 months after she died. This is happening more and more. This story is this kind of thing. Somebody's got to teach computers the meaning of the word death. The family received a letter from the Israeli National Airline this week. It said Leah Rabin's status as a member of the Frequent Flyers Elite Gold Club had been revoked because she'd made too few flights in the last year. It was a mistake, said spokesman Ron Rahav after the family received the letter. We spoke with her daughter and apologized. We are very sorry to the family. He said the mistake was a computer error. For security reasons, he said Leah Rabin had been listed in the computer only as El Rabin. Computer is sorry. Texas Rangers pitcher John Rocker issued a written apology for anti-gay remarks he made toward patrons of a popular eatery. Rocker said he was with his girlfriend last Sunday at Breadwinner's Cafe and Bakery in Dallas when some customers began badgering and pestering him. It seemed as if they were trying to bait me with suggestive comments, Rocker said in the statement. Richard Garcia, who waited on Rocker and his girlfriend, said the ball player was not provoked. Garcia said Rocker called a male couple sitting in a nearby table, quote, fruitcakes, as he got up and left. Says Garcia to the Dallas Morning News, just because you're a superstar, that still does not license you to say that. Rocker said he finished his meal and got up to leave. Then he said the patrons followed him out of the restaurant located in a predominantly gay neighborhood and made an obscene gesture. At that point, Rocker said, I admit I was angry and said some things I probably should not have said, but I wanted to make it clear their attentions were unwelcome. Rangers spokesman said the remarks were anti-gay in nature, but Rocker's specific comments were unknown. He made remarks, disparaging remarks about gays and minorities in a Sports Illustrated interview 2 years ago. He apologized for that. He's a serial apologist, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, in the apologies of the week, a big one. Joe Esterhaz, currently recovering from throat cancer, apologized in an op-ed article in this week's New York Times for glamorizing cigarette smoking in his screenplays and called upon those in Hollywood to learn from him. He apologized for being responsible for an untold number of deaths. I would say the sentence would be the penance would be, Joe, go count them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know, it came as big news to Joe Esterhaz that smoking was bad. He had to get throat cancer before. Man, talk about hitting a mule with a 2x4. On the issue of the home of the homeless, Harry, until recently I lived in Grand Haven, Michigan, a beach town on Lake Michigan. What a great place to be homeless. We had only one homeless guy. He camped out all summer and spent a lot of time in the library in the winter. Sometimes he'd disappear after Christmas, but he'd always reappear in the spring. So I nominate Grand Haven as the new home of the homeless. The bus station is on the edge of the town, and it's a short walk to the beach. I think he's kidding. Dear sir, San Francisco is far and away the epicenter of homelessness. The corridor of failure and iniquity known as Market Street literally looks like you're walking through Calcutta. This is from my biggest fan, Trevor Grimshaw, probably a fake name. They used to meander mostly around 6th Street in the south of Market areas. Well, they basically are everywhere, but lately they've taken to standing in the middle of the freeway on-ramp access intersections that resemble some badly reenacted scenes from the movie Treasure Island as they move about in between the slowly moving commuters. The part I find the most chaffing, ooh, a Brit, in the usage of the phrase, anything helps, even a smile written on their pieces of cardboard, which wouldn't be so bad, except that every single solitary one of them has it duplicated verbatim, and of course the utterly intrinsic falsehood of that statement. The DA has unofficially placed a ban on San Francisco police officers ticketing homeless people for pretty much anything as they can't profit. Okay, Palo Alto has nothing on San Francisco. I walk around there every day past the blue and cocky. This is disparaging people in Palo Alto. Wallowing in their blandness and chatting on their cell phones, there's a smattering of homeless at best on a good day. Nothing more than a gaggle. San Francisco wins. All right, so the battle of Northern California has been joined. You guys figure out up there which should be your nominee. And if, of course, for any reason, the nominee is unable to assume the role of Home of the Homeless, the runner-up will take on those responsibilities.
Now the sun is up, that dream has flown away.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the show where there's never enough reality. Heck, you know, that could be our motto here. And by us, I mean we. News Corporation is owned by Rupert Murdoch. Need I point that out? News Corporation is discussing going forward with a new cable network devoted to reality television. The so-called Fox Reality Channel. Oh, it's Fox Reality, which would be cable and satellite delivered, would run reality programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, according to Electronic Media. It's kind of a trade, but we'll be reading from the trades later. So this is a trade. I'm reading from the trade extra bonus coverage. News Corporation has also been contemplating the idea for another channel that would be built around classic Fox TV programming. Am I still speaking English? Because those words don't seem to track in a comprehensible manner. In one version of the Fox Reality Channel plan, according to insiders. Hey, insiders, call me next time. A digital tier cable channel would be up and running in the United States by 2005. Oh, yeah, the reality thing won't be dead by then. Yeah, do it. Do it. Blow the money and get on with Reality Channel in 2005. And call me then. And, oh, at the latest, and perhaps sooner in the United Kingdom and elsewhere internationally as a satellite-delivered service. Fox pretty much wrote the book on reality, said one grudgingly admiring competitor, including most recently this summer's American Idol, planning for the tentatively named Fox Reality Channel, as well as the classic Fox Channel, began last year. Rupert and other senior News Corporation executives have yet to sign off on a budget and a specific... Hey, you know, take my money. Really. Because I believe... And specific launch strategy for the proposed reality network. But once the green light flashes, the network's development would move quickly to beat potential competitors to the all-reality franchise. Insiders cautioned there are serious issues of cost and carriage. How about lunacy? How about lunacy as an objection? Okay. How cable operators in this unsettled marketplace might react to the prospect of the digital Fox Reality Channel can be inferred from the criteria one senior operator executive suggested for new digital channels. The new channel has to be narrow, but deep. Appeal to advertisers looking for targeted and desirable demographics and lend itself to video-on-demand applications. A News Corporation corporate spokesman declined comment on the plans. All right, well, a little more reality for you, ladies and gentlemen. The Vice President, Dick Cheney, has resurfaced in public, making a speech at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco this week, part of the administration's drumbeat advocating the regime change in Iraq, despite increasing criticism not only from United States allies, but administration allies, including Dick Armey, retiring majority leader of the House, a Republican. Who needs a Dick Armey when you got a Dick Cheney? And also, of course, Dick Cheney, while in California, was expected to meet with California Republican gubernatorial candidate Bill Simon, whose investment firm recently was found liable for $78 million in a corporate fraud deal. Cheney managed to avoid Simon. This week in Crawford, Texas, by the way, the Bush administration will be staging an economic summit, not including some of the Democrats in Congress who suggested it in the first place. A media guide says the participants on the eight panels will have diverse points of view, but a White House official acknowledged that there are limits. Quote, I don't think there's any point in picking someone who has the opposite point of view, the official said. Opposite to what? Anyway, Dick Cheney is back. He will be attending the economic summit. But as I say, he had other fish to fry this past week.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of a man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, Confidential.
Call me a diehard Texan if you like. But I never have gotten to California. Of course, I'm registered to vote in Wyoming, but that's just a technicality that allows me to serve with a fellow diehard Texan. Anyway, the bunker is a distant memory. Rumsfeld and I agreed that I couldn't stay in Washington, even an underground Washington, while Numero Uno was spending 3 weeks counting the cows on his little ranchito. Might make the natives a little too restless about who's in charge. And right about now, we're deeper into the business of selling confidence than a Nigerian emailer. So it was I found myself out in what for Democrats has been the Golden State. Friday, August 9th, 10:30 a.m., giving a speech about Iraq, while fending off the subject changers, whose only goal in life is to keep me from achieving mine. Saddam Hussein is a danger to us. He's a danger to his own people. If we were to be brutally honest about all this, he's actually a danger to himself. By removing him from office, we'd actually be prolonging his life. Any other questions?
Yes, sir. About the accounting practices at Halliburton?
No, I'm not speaking about that today. It could be construed as interfering with an investigation that's underway. Thanks very much and good afternoon. Jesus, these people. Yeah, Eagle's Head.
Yes, sir. It's Darlene.
Hey, any word from my attorney?
He says there are several ways to interfere with an ongoing investigation. Mm-hmm. You should read his memo and make a choice.
Will do. Anything else?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A Bill Simon was trying to reach you very urgently.
Oh, crap. That I need like another plain-looking wife. Does he know I'm here?
He knows you're making a speech in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We did tell him it was at an undisclosed location,
good.
But apparently the Chronicle had the place and time,
yeah,
so...
This media thing is getting entirely out of hand. This is wartime. You can't give that kind of information to the enemy.
Yes, sir.
Not that the Republican candidate for governor of our largest state is the enemy. It's just that...
You'd rather not be seen in his vicinity this particular century.
That's my girl. We all set for the video phone meeting with the Iraqi opposition tomorrow?
Well, one of them is still holding out for a second night at the hotel, but I think they'll all be there.
Okay, Darlene, fend off our friend. I'm heading for the airport.
Oh, great. Great speech, Mr. Vice President.
Thanks very much.
I wish the President could make as forceful an explanation of why we have to attack another country.
Well, give him time. He will. I'm just sort of testing themes, working on nuance control. Mm-hmm. So
I'm a friend of Bill Simon's. I wonder if...
I gotta run. My allowable time in public has expired. But God bless. I gotta say, being known as an underground kind of guy does have its uses. Like national security itself, it's one of those excuses you just can't argue with. 11:35 a.m., limousine to an undisclosed military airfield.
This is the most circuitous route to the airfield I know of, sir.
Good. Nobody would think of going this way?
Nobody in their right mind.
Yeah, fine. Well, you just can't be too careful these days.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Eagle's Head.
Dick. Yeah, Ed Carpenter, Republican State Committee here in California.
Ed, yeah, sure. We met over at the thing.
There you go. Look, I've got Bill Simon here in the car. We're driving to his next event. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if we could, hook up with you before you fly off for just half a second.
Ed, I'm sure you realize that... I'm one of Bill's biggest fans. He's an excellent businessman. I personally believe that payphones are going to make a big comeback.
You know, but maybe if I could just put him on the phone with you, we could snap a picture of him talking with you. That would
Ed, I'm a return on investment kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of very good people have invested a lot of resources in the Bush-Cheney effort, including Bill Simon, if I remember the computerized records correctly.
Maybe just a postcard for...
Now, for me to just indulge my own desires and hang out with a man whose firm has been accused of fraud at a time when the subject changers would like nothing better than to smear this administration as being pro-Enron or pro-WorldCom or something. Well, it just doesn't seem like very smart business.
I'm sorry, Dick. I'm losing you.
Isn't that interesting, Ed? I thought I was losing you. Driver, a little faster, if you don't mind. Then it was off to Wyoming. Like the voting, Junior and I couldn't both be vacationing in Texas either. But the undisclosed cabin is pretty nicely equipped. The fishing looks awfully good. Basically, Wyoming is as close as you can be to living in an underground bunker while still seeing daylight. End of partial diary for August 9th. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Ladies and gentlemen, you probably know this already, but if I was sure you knew this already, I wouldn't be wasting your time with it. And yet here I am, sure enough, wasting your time with it. The Federal Communications Commission voted this week to require that new TVs contain digital tuners. Welcome. Another giant leap into the digital wonderland has been taken this week. The FCC put on their seven-league boots. My favorite point of the story from Commissioner Michael Powell, colon raised him right. He complained that market forces alone had not assured the transition to digital television. So the government steps in. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the market. I mean, not the supermarket. It's okay. It's open all night. But the free market, it's good. Not the flea market, the free market. It's good. It's a good thing. But there are a lot of things the free market doesn't or can't do. That's not a knock. The very FCC pointed out one of them. It can't manage the transition to digital television. Other things it can't do is provide health insurance for 40 million Americans. Just some things that the free market can't do. Interesting choice as to which of these things the government decides to step in and say, we'll take care of that. It's the transition to digital television. The requirement for tuners in new TV, digital tuners, is to be phased in over 5 years, starting with large sets 2 years from now, and smaller TVs by 2007. According to lobbyists for the television manufacturers, which got this point into several newspaper articles, news articles on the subject, the vote is certain to raise the cost of televisions. Whether it will be substantial or small is the subject of a big debate. Consumers, this is not a market-oriented policy, says Mike Powell, head of the FCC. This is an industrial policy. Oh, I see. This is to build us up against Japan. Is Japan still in business, by the way? Has anybody checked lately? Is anybody? The commission's order requires manufacturers to include digital tuners either as part of the set itself or as external units. Most television manufacturers oppose it. They don't want to do this, says a senior officer in the FCC's Office of Engineering and Technology. The Consumer Electronics Association, as we said last week on this broadcast, says that putting a digital tuner in would raise the price by about $250, maybe even doubling the cost of small sets. The FCC doesn't believe that. Zenith disagrees. Zenith, I think, gets some royalty payments if these tuners go in. So they're splitting off from the rest of the industry. A lot of people ask me when I rant on about digital television, why does the government care? The government cares because the FCC wants to reclaim the analog spectrum, that is to say, the part of the TV spectrum that we actually watch now. When the industry switches to digital, they give back the analog frequencies, and the FCC wants to sell that part of the spectrum, most likely for $5 to $10 billion. which would help ease budget shortfalls. They've been counting on that. And the longer it takes us to transfer to digital, the longer it takes them to book the sale of the analog spectrum. You might ask, why not let market forces work, sell the digital spectrum, and let the TV broadcaster switch to digital when the consumers demand it? And you would be right.
Any day, in your heart you'll hear it call you, come away, come away. Valley High will whisper on the wind of the sea, here am I, your special island, come to me, come to me. Your own special hopes, your own special dreams. Bloom on the hillside and shine in the streams. If you try, you will find me where the sky meets the sea, here am I, your special island. Come to me, come to me. Valley High, Valley High, Valley
And now, ladies and gentlemen, almost as if it's a habit I cannot break, I'm going to read the trades for you. Much to read today from Advertising Age, the Bible, the Koran, if you will, of the advertising industry. First, retailers tap celebrities. I'll read that for you. More to come. Retailers are preparing an epic Star War for what's expected to be a soft back-to-school season. From the Gap to Payless Shoe Stores, or sorry, Payless Shoe Source, celebrities will populate the retail advertising landscape far more than in previous fall seasons. Even Levi Strauss & Company, trying to capture the attention of a young audience, as placed in its advertising an up-and-coming celebrity, Gael Garcia Bernal, a Mexican actor who appeared in the film Y Tu Mama Tambien. Me gusta Levi's. Competing jeans maker and specialty store The Gap, meanwhile, continues its long-running practice of using celebrities in its ads for fall. Gap will use Whoopi Goldberg. Haven't seen enough of Whoopi. Sissy Spacek and Christian Slater in its advertising, a company spokeswoman said. Welcome back, Whoopster, is all I can say. When's Whoopi the magazine coming? I don't... Gap's Old Navy unit has also returned to using celebrities like Morgan Fairchild in its efforts. Morgan Fairchild at Old Navy. They just go together. Payless Shoe Source is using Star Jones to reposition the store away from price and toward fashion. They use a split screen with shoes on one side and Miss Jones on the other. Yes, it's a big screen. Talking about the high fashion shoes now in stock. And there's more. Right here, oftentimes, said one consultant in the field, oftentimes marketers turn to celebrities as a last resort. When people can't come up with something that can stand alone, you borrow an equity, he said. Buddy, can you spare it? Yeah, I know. But he said in the case of Miss Jones, who appears on ABC's The View and is known for her love of shoes, Payless is, quote, aligned with somebody consistent with the core values and sense of style of the repositioned Payless. Yes, it's still called Payless, but you're not supposed to notice that. Miss Jones also holds the title of Payless's Chief of Consumer Style. One consultant said appealing to youth and other consumer audiences through celebrities can be a powerful strategy. A lot of marketing is aspirational and associative, he said, with consumers hoping a little of the celebrity will rub off on them. But the downside is the risk of a brand being associated with something you don't have total control over. You know, the good thing is that if a little bit of Star Jones rubs off on you, there's plenty left. Now, House members increase efforts to remove Ogilvy. Ogilvy and Mather's controversial win of the $152 million White House anti-drug contract is still under heavy fire as congressmen and drug office executives clash over legislation that bars the Ogilvy agency from being paid for its work. What? This is your brain on ads. Representative Mark Souter, Republican of Indiana, chairman of the Government Reform Committee, warned drug office executives last week to prepare to transition the account from Ogilvy. The hearing followed House action approving an appropriation bill containing an amendment that bars Ogilvy from receiving government funds. All right, so what's the problem with Ogilvy? I'll tell you. U.S. Representative Bob Barr, Republican of Georgia. That's right, the same one who fired the blank antique pistol by accident this week, is a vocal critic of Ogilvy's role. He proposed the amendment. Ogilvy originally won the contract for the White House anti-drug account in 1999, was rehired earlier this month after a review. It earlier paid $1.8 million to settle civil allegations that it overbilled the government a criminal investigation into the alleged alterations of employee timesheets continues. Christopher Marston, deputy chief of staff for the drug office, testified at the hearing, warning that firing Ogilvie would disrupt the anti-drug campaign. The effort he would continue, he said, but with a reduced presence. Ogilvie wrote a letter to the U.S. Navy, which administers the contract. That's an interesting story. Asking reassurance that it wouldn't be risking its own money when it advances payments to media companies for fall and winter advertising buys next month. Congressmen were skeptical of claims that an agency change would harm the program. Says Representative Barr, they have basically ripped off the taxpayers of the country. Let's stop worrying about Ogilvie and start worrying about America. A sentiment we can all agree with. At least the second half, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature. Still. Ladies and gentlemen, the bar has been lowered again. It's too late for this program, but you should know it. There's a big battle over Rosie magazine between the publishers Gruner and Jahr, a division of Bertelsmann. Yes, they're German. Why do you ask? And Rosie O'Donnell, former talk show host and comedian. She's in a dispute because it's become clear to her that although it's her name and her picture on the cover, she doesn't really control the magazine anymore since they fired her hand-picked editor. So the new editor comes in, and they're having a fight over Valentine's Day recipes in an upcoming issue. And the new editor wants to put in a low-fat recipe, and Rosie demurs, saying, quote, "My people like to eat." That is going to do it for this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network on shortwave at WBCQ on the planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like my people liking to eat if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail@interworld.net. That's lemail@interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.